I'm Tanzina Vega, back with you on The Takeaway. On March 24th, Attorney General William Barr released a four-page summary of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. On March 27th, a letter sent by Mueller to Barr shows that the special counsel himself disagreed with how Barr framed the report to the public. In the letter released by the Justice Department today, Mueller wrote that Barr's summary of the report, quote, did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office's work and conclusions. Barr is testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee today, and here he is answering a question from Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin about Mueller's concerns.
When I talked to the special counsel about the letter, my understanding was his concern was not the accuracy of the statement of the findings in my letter, but that he wanted more out there to provide additional context to explain his reasoning on why he didn't reach a decision on obstruction.
Barr is also scheduled to appear before the House Judiciary tomorrow. It's an opportunity for lawmakers to hold the Attorney General accountable for his handling of the release of the Mueller report. But, as we know, it could easily turn into partisan grandstanding from both parties. Jessica Roth is a professor at Cardozo School of Law and a former federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. Jessica, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Jessica, let's start with the letter that Robert Mueller sent to William Barr. He disagreed with Barr's summary of the Mueller report. How significant is it that the Attorney General may have misled the public on Mueller's findings? I mean, does it still matter now that we have access to more of the report?
It's extremely significant, and it's significant that Mueller even sent that letter in the first place. It's very unusual for a prosecutor to put in writing the prosecutor's displeasure with how the superior has characterized the prosecutor's work. We know Mueller is very circumspect and has really not spoken to the press at all during the course of his investigation. The fact that he thought it was necessary to put in writing his displeasure with how Attorney General Barr had characterized his report and conclusions, I think, is very significant. And then, of course, the fact that of the mischaracterization is very significant as well.
When Barr testified before the Senate on April 10th, Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland asked him this question.
Did Bob Mueller support your conclusion?
I don't know whether Bob Mueller supported my conclusion.
The letter released by the Justice Department today was sent on March 27th. So based on that information, what's your reaction to what Barr told Senator Van Hollen?
My reaction is that at a minimum, that statement from Attorney General Barr was misleading. He had heard from Robert Mueller, and in particular, that the displeasure was about the characterization of the obstruction of justice component of the findings.
Which is quite important. Tell us more about that, Jessica.
So in Volume 2 of the report, Special Counsel Mueller laid out the evidence for at least 10 possible charges of obstruction of justice by the president, but did not come to a conclusion about whether the president actually committed obstruction of justice. And Special Counsel Mueller explained that the reason why he wasn't reaching that conclusion was because he thought it was essentially unfair to do so, given that he was following Department of Justice guidance, a policy statement, that a prosecutor could not indict a sitting president. And if an indictment could not be brought and the opportunity for a trial had to clear the person's name, that it would similarly be unfair to characterize the conduct as a crime and to essentially accuse the president of a criminal charge when there would be no opportunity for a trial, and that it would impair the presidency while that charge essentially was out there in the air. What subsequently happened is that Attorney General Barr made a prosecutorial decision that seems to anyone who has read the Volume 2 of the report to be quite contrary to what Mueller was saying in how he laid out the facts and the law. And so I believe that Attorney General Barr knew, or at least was willfully blind to the fact that Mueller would disagree with the conclusion that there was no obstruction of justice here.
Jessica, I said at the top that this could just be political grandstanding on both sides. I mean, we understand the gravity of what's being said here, but what could the actual consequences be for this? I mean, are there consequences for the Attorney General, for example?
Well, the Attorney General of the United States is subject to impeachment. I don't believe that an Attorney General has actually ever been impeached, but it is a possibility. And so the standard would be the same as for the president, whether it was treason, bribery, or a high crime or misdemeanor. And so if the Congress comes to the conclusion that the attorney general has disserved the public and even committed a crime, potentially himself, obstruction of justice or perjury. I'm not prepared to say that yet. But if they were to come to that conclusion, they could start with impeachment proceedings of the attorney general. So that's one possible quite serious consequence. There also could be the chance of a criminal referral. There is precedent for an attorney general, or at least a former attorney general, to be convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice. And that was President Nixon's attorney general, John Mitchell.
So Jessica, there's been a lot of back and forth between Barr and the Democrat-led House of Representatives about Thursday's hearing tomorrow. Why is Barr threatening not to even show up?
Apparently, Barr is threatening not to show up because he objects to being questioned by staff members for the committee. He is willing to take questions from the members, but not from staff. As I understand it, the proposed setup is that he will take questions from members of the committee, but then there will be afterwards 30 minutes of questioning by staff. And he objects to that. And there's precedent for staff for the committee to question witnesses and even cabinet-level officials. In recent memory, we saw Dr. Christine Blasey Ford questioned by someone who wasn't even a permanent member of the staff of the Judiciary Committee that was considering now U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's nomination. The Republicans brought in an outside prosecutor to ask questions of a civilian witness. And historically, if we go back to the Watergate scandal, a cabinet officer was questioned by staff members in connection with those hearings. And in the Iran-Contra scandal, we also had cabinet members questioned by staff. So it's unusual to have a cabinet official questioned by staff, but there is precedent.
Why is his resistance to the – what does that – his resistance tell us?
Well, the advantage of questioning by staff is that it's likely to be much more professional and focused, and there will be follow-up. When we have questioning by members of the committee, as we've seen, it tends to be these fragmented 5-minute inquiries. It's very easy for the witness essentially to filibuster and use up the time. And
We've seen that quite a bit,
and it's very hard to get follow-up. When you have a professional, and usually these are trained, often former prosecutors, at doing the questioning, they're much more likely to ask precise, short questions, to ask the follow-up questions of the witness when the witness is not giving a responsive answer, and to actually get to the meat of the matter. That's why if you don't really want to be answering tough questions, generally you would prefer not to be questioned by a professional staff member.
But what does that tell us about the job that both Republicans and Democrats are doing or aren't doing on behalf of the American public? If the attorney general has misled the American public about this report, shouldn't the job of the sitting congressional members be to do something about this?
It absolutely should be the job of the sitting members of the Senate to do something about it, regardless of party. It's a very sad state of affairs that I could so clearly say to you in response that we will definitely see different types of questioning depending on party. I agree. It should be the job of everyone, regardless of party, to try to get to the bottom of what happened and really probe the extent to which the attorney general was misleading the public and the Senate.
Jessica Roth is a professor at Cardozo School of Law and a former federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. Jessica, great to have you on as always.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.